Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Healthy Gut Girl, Kitty Martone. This is Stuff Your Doctor Should Know, and I'm coming to you live from not deep inside your large intestine. Today, I'm coming to you from over the target. Actually, I am on a show called Over the Target with my friend Johnny Patriot. He invited me to come on his show, and it was so much fun and so informative that I thought I would just make it one of my episodes. So I'm happy to announce that that's what you'll be listening today, me talking about my stuff. And I'm excited that I'm doing this. I'm kind of like on tour. My husband decided it would be a good idea if I went on tour. And so that's what I'm doing. I'm going on other people's shows talking about, guess what? Gut health. Gut health and how fundamentally important it is, no matter how far along you are on your health journey, you always have to be reminded of these basics, the basic fundamental gut health principles. And we talk about those in this podcast. And, you know, it's just foundational, man. Like, you really just have to know how to take care of your gut. Always be aware of what you're eating, the quality of what you're eating, how you're digesting it, how you feel when you eat it, how you're eliminating it, all those things. So important. And we talk about that, which reminds me, don't forget about healthygutgirl.com and click on the shop page. Because the shop page, though I don't sell anything myself, it has all the different products up to date, that, you know, I always update them. The current products that I am recommending that are high quality, I have vetted them. They are very, very, you know, the efficacy is very high. The quality is really high. And if I have discounts to offer you, I give them there on that page. So make sure you check that out and follow me on healthygutgirl_ and listen to me and Johnny Patriot talk about all kinds of good stuff.
Storm season is upon us, and red pills are in the forecast. Get your head out of the mainstream media and listen to the Over the Target podcast with your host, Johnny Patriot.
Well, hello, fellow patriots. Johnny Patriot here. Today is September 22nd, year of our Lord 2021. Today I have a wonderful guest. My wife kind of hipped me to her about a year ago on Facebook, and I love what she's got to say. I love her. I think she's appropriate for this period of time, and I think people need some encouragement and some healthy living tips in their lives right now. So I've got Miss Kitty Martone, also known as the Healthy Gut Girl, on this evening's show. And on her website, I'm going to read exactly what it says, Kitty, so don't get mad. Gut-centric author, functional health educator, and host of the podcast Stuff Your Doctor Should Know. So with that being said, I am going to bring on Miss Martone. Well, hello, Kitty.
Hi.
Good to see you. Good to finally connect. It's been a little while.
Yes, indeed it has. I hope we're going to talk about red pill stuff too.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. The show's all about.
But first, we're going to talk about you. Okay. That's why we're here. But we'll talk about some red pill stuff too. I know you're eager. I know you're eager. For the people that don't know, who is the Healthy Gut Girl? I know that, you know, reading a little bit on your website over the last couple of weeks and looking at your posts on Facebook, you have an interesting background. You have an interesting history. So, and you always haven't been the Healthy Gut Girl. Yeah. Or healthy, for that matter. So,
well, if you go to Instagram, you will not find the Healthy Gut Girl, me. You will find many Healthy Gut Girls, but I've been shadow banned. So if you look for me, you have to find me at healthygutgirl_. And you got to spell the whole thing out, because, and then they warn you and ask you if you really want to follow someone like me. And yet you should say yes.
Yes.
Let's see. I was born a patriot. My father was a drill sergeant in the Army. And I was born in El Paso, Texas on accident, but I gladly claim to be partly Texan. And, but we're from New Mexico. My mom was visiting my father there and had me a month early. And that month early was significant to my health because Of course, being born a month early is not the greatest thing for you. And right. I struggled with a lot of health concerns, and I had spinal meningitis and pneumonia just within the first 3 months of living, and really just started off a tremendous like life, young childhood, very sick all the time. And we were in the military, so I was always getting vaccinated. And so this whole concept behind vaccine injury is nothing new to me at all. And so my mom would say every time we got vaccinated, when we would go overseas or anywhere, because they love doing that in the military, they love giving you shots.
Right.
And I would always get sick after. I would always have some kind of reaction. Well, needless to say, I spent ear, nose, and throat issues, gut issues my whole young life, and then reached puberty and went into this crazy state of what I now know is having autoimmune conditions and dealing with a lot, and everything just became much worse. And so I was on a lot of drugs, you know, prescription drugs as a kid and as a young adult, until I finally started having reactions to the drugs. And so I sought out alternative therapies. I moved from New Mexico to Los Angeles to be an actress. And and I sought out like acupuncturists and chiropractors and whatnot to try to find alternative methods of finding balance and getting healthy. And I was so ill, like seasonally ill, that I would not be able to work. So it was debilitating. I would not be able to actually show up for work and things like that. So I met my husband. So we're jumping to meeting my husband, who's a chiropractor. And he's not just any chiropractor. He's a holistic. He deals with the whole body. So he's not just adjusting your spine. He would also work on your nutrition and ask you questions about detoxification and, you know, everything. And he introduced me to this world of self-care and the way things should be, you know, taking responsibility for your health and encouraging detoxification in the body. Anyway, we fell in love, and I was getting free chiropractic either, but, and he had this interesting practice, because a lot of his demographic was children who were disabled, pregnant women, infants, babies, every kind of child, typical children, as well as children who were, had disabilities. And a portion of that group of children were vaccine injured. And so I fell in love with his practice and said, I want to help you. So he sent me to school to become a nutritionist and an herbalist and a holistic health practitioner. And in that process, I realized that everything I learned, I couldn't really use on these children, because they can't take supplements. They can't, you know, you can't encourage detoxification in a child who isn't even eating. And so, you know, maybe they have a G-tube, or they're just really picky eaters and they have autism. So they have like three things on their menu. So I had to develop a whole new set of skills on my own, finding people who worked with children like this. And that's how I met author Donna Gates, who wrote The Body Ecology Diet. And that is all about not just autistic children, but recovering and remediating people's guts through diet. And there's this connection between the gut and the brain. And children who have autism and all kinds of other ailments and disabilities and imbalances, and gut health. So I learned, I became her shadow, basically, and I learned how to make fermented foods and teach people how to basically live this diet. And it was a very challenging diet. So my husband and I took it on, and we started to help these children in that way. So he would do the physical therapy part of it, the chiropractic part of it, and I would do the nutrition. And it changed. It started to really drastically change my health, you know, when I started focusing on the gut and not just overall general, hey, let's eat healthy, but actually focusing and remediating my gut. It just changed everything. And so this was, you know, going on 17 years or so. I'm just blown away by that. And, you know, realizing that now with everything going on now, and I don't want to jump ahead, but just that I've been kind of on this hill with a megaphone for a really long time regarding vaccine injury, regarding gut health and the immune system, regarding everything that is being talked about now. I've been on this hill for a while. So there's me. There's Healthy Gut Girl.
Well, that's I love that story because it ties into the last year and a half as far as my wife and I, because my wife, Julie, she got sick. Nobody could figure out what was wrong with her. She had a spinal tap, the whole nine yards. And still to this day, they have no idea what was wrong with her. And so we started doing a little research into gut health because a lot of, you know, we've kind of in the fringes would see an article here, an article there about the gut brain connection and your nervous system and that kind of stuff. And I think is Candida, is that something that's part of this whole gut health thing?
Absolutely.
Because we both have, and we know it, but we're not very good at sticking to things.
You know,
we know what our trigger foods are and that kind of stuff. And ever since I was a kid, I've always had some, if I sat down with you or read your books, I probably would figure out what was going on in my body because I'm very sensitive to a lot of foods,
Wait. You haven't read my books?
No, not yet. I'm waiting for an autographed copy.
I'm kidding. You got it.
But no, that's why I'm going in this direction. That's why I have you on because I think this is important. And after about $60,000 worth of medical bills, we still haven't figured out, you know, but we did correlate that eating certain foods makes her feel better and certain foods makes her, you know, she has a lot of symptoms where, you know, it's a nerve thing. Like her lips will get numb or her tongue will get numb or her eye will kind of whatever. So they thought maybe, well, she's stroking out or something, and you know that wasn't the case. So but she got introduced to, it's funny you mentioned your husband, we have a place here not far from us called the Drugless Doctors, and they are a chiropractic firm, but they deal in the whole body. They don't just, you don't go in for an adjustment and that's it. They talk about health, they talk about supplements and, you know, things that you're doing in your life, you know, your lifestyle period. And since she's been going there, I have to say she's gotten a lot better. There's far less days that we're worried about going to the ER than, you know, that's very few and far between.
Yeah.
Whereas there was about a year and a half, almost 2 years, where we were almost afraid to go to sleep at night, you know, because something might happen.
And, wow.
So this really interests me. And that's why I really felt I needed to have you on. And I think it affects a lot of people. And I think a lot of people just don't know or make the connection and with their gut, their mind, you know, their mental clarity, whatever, their quality of life in general.
Yeah.
And so I think it's important that people like you get your megaphones and get up on top of the hill and start, you know, not just the vaccine stuff, but just like the gut health. The gut health is super important with all the crap that, I mean, look at what they're pushing right now to try to get people to get vaccinated when this all started. You know, you got McDonald's, Krispy Kreme, you know, all these companies that you probably shouldn't be eating in the first place. So we're going to try to push something unhealthy on you to kind of claim that it's healthy for you.
Yeah. I mean, that just tells you that it isn't about saving lives, because if it were, they would be on the news once a week. The health secretary, the health czar, whoever it is, she would be up there saying, listen, these are the things you should be doing to boost your immune system. Mm-hmm. And they should say, you know, and they should have a protocol for that. They should be mailing them to every household in America. And they're not. And they're bribing people with free junk food and beer and whatever. And that's, you know, that just tells you it's not about saving lives. It's nothing to do with saving lives.
Yeah, it's pretty insane when people present the idea of preventative medicine or preventative treatments, you know, catching things early, eating right, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets censored. It's like, no, we don't want that. There's no money in that. So
yeah,
why would we do that? You know,
and you know, I had someone ask me, well, not a couple of people on Instagram. In the last 18 months or so since all this happened, my engagement dropped drastically, dramatically, right when I was very vocal about everything. And then all of a sudden, it just shot up. It's like it weeded out, you know, the wheat from the chaff. And I was left with people who were really hungry for this info. And then they were sharing it and they were sharing it. But there were still some stragglers who were kind of stalking and, you know, wanting, you know, I think some people like getting irritated, you know, they get on Twitter just to get like, just to get mad.
Yes.
And they pop in once in a while. And just recently somebody said, I miss the old Healthy Gut Girl. Where is she? And I said, hey, I miss her too, man. I'm like, I don't want,
she might come back.
Yeah. Like I, you know, I'm still definitely promoting and talking about gut health, of course, but I'm also, you know, vocal about the way that this, the immune system and promoting vitamin C and promoting healthy eating is all of a sudden a conspiracy theory. Like when did vitamin D become a conspiracy theory? You know, right. So they weaponized this whole narrative against people like myself and doctors and practitioners. And, you know, they weaponized it against us and made us look like we're anti-science and, you know, creating, right. I think YouTube started blocking people who were making claims about vitamin C curing things. I mean, I almost fell off my chair when I heard that. I thought of all the people that we have helped with vitamin C, you know, and how it is one of the number one vitamins that a person should take who is immunocompromised like right. that. And how can that possibly become a conspiracy all of a sudden? We're denying science, you know?
It's amazing how it was scary, how quickly and how easily this all devolved. How did this happen so fast? How did this just happen this fast? And it's like, there's no gray area. There's people just like, they're either on this side or they're on this side. And it's scary. But I think people are kind of coming around, the ones that are kind of sitting on the fence, the that were kind of reserving judgment, I guess. Kind of starting to come around. I guess even in my own family, I can kind of see some people asking more pertinent questions as to, because everything just seems so insane right now. Like they have to ask questions. And so going back to your books, like the gut health diet for beginners, when did you write these books? I mean, what's the timeline on these two books?
I wrote one after the other. 3 years ago was Gut Health Diet for Beginners. That was the first one. Okay. And then the 4-week gut health plan. Now, this is an interesting, the first one was like, I was ready for that because I had all these recipes and I had all this info and just, I was already writing a book on my own. So I had a lot of stuff ready to go. Mm-hmm. And then once I finished that book, it did so well. And then they approached me again and said, let's do another one. It's really, you know, gut health's really popular. That one was harder because I had already used up a lot of my recipes. So I had to get super creative and it's more strict. So the 4-week gut health plan is really for people who have really compromised guts and a lot of digestive distress. And, you know, something maybe that people don't mention a lot in regards to gut health is, you know, you think gut health and you think, oh, heartburn, bloating, IBS. People don't think eczema, insomnia, hormone imbalance, you know, low T, ED. They don't think of those things when they think of gut health, but really every single imbalance in the body comes down to your gut health. Your gut basically is your second brain. It's your enteric nervous system and it runs everything. It really, no decision is made in the body without the help of the gut. So people always, you know, they'll say to me, I don't really need any diet stuff. I'm having eczema. Can you do anything for that? Or, you know, they don't correlate the two. Or I have, you know, high blood pressure. Right. And I know I need to eat better, but they don't want to talk about the gut. And what we're realizing is, in fact, there's a study out, and Kiran Krishnan, who's one of my favorite microbiologists, I've had him on my show a few times. He's incredible. Okay. But he had a paper done that said, basically, if you have any non-communicable disease, so diabetes, high blood pressure, low blood pressure, you name it, any non-communicable disease, you have leaky gut. You have a leaky gut. The integrity of the lining of your intestines is compromised and it's permeable. So when you eat things and you begin to digest those foods, the waste material, the waste matter from that food makes its way into the fissures, if you will call them that, in the gut and into the bloodstream. And this reaction, and it's called endotoxemia, this reaction that the body has is to protect you. And it's a autoimmune reaction. It's an inflammatory response to protect the body, to protect the brain, to protect the heart, to protect your eyes, to protect vital organs from these toxins. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, it inflames the body. And this is everybody. I mean, think about how much inflammation just the average person has, even just a kid, a teenager, or we're seeing it in really young kids now, really young kids.
Yeah, that's a shame. Inflammation is a huge deal because it affects your whole body. I have high blood pressure and I know I have inflammation issues. And it's funny because you went right down this list and you might as well just put my face next to the list because I didn't start getting, I don't have bad eczema, but I do get it. And it seems to happen at certain times of the year, like late summer, going into winter kind of thing, fall, winter. And it sticks around. Some years it sticks around all year. Other years it's maybe a couple months. But I noticed that when I eat a lot of things I probably shouldn't be eating, that's when it seems to be worse. Mm-hmm. And now going back to leaky gut, because that reminded
me. Was that just a confession?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. we're all about, we're transparent over here. We're not trying to hide anything.
Good.
I mean, there's for people that don't know, tell them what leaky gut is. Like what's happening? Is it, because when I hear leaky gut, I think, oh my God, like stuff's leaking out of my stomach into my, my body cavity or something. Like, and that's why people have these giant stomachs. And like, when you go to the doctor, they always say, well, it's bad if it's hard. Like when you push on your stomach and it's hard, that's what I think of. I think of like all your stuff's kind of just going into a pocket.
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of is in a rude way. That kind of is what it is. But I mean, it's far more, there's a lot of biochemical jargon that we can throw in there about what's happening. But, and it isn't like, oh, I just ate a piece of pizza and the piece of pizza is in my bloodstream now.
Right.
It's not, it's really like, okay, so let's break down this very basic thing. So the digestive process, when we eat something, before we even put it in our mouth, the digestive process begins because you begin to secrete, your brain sees it, it sends a message to your enteric nervous system, sends it to the gut, and your stomach starts producing enzymes and hydrochloric acid to start to break it down. So you start to salivate, then you start to chew the food, and that chewing and the saliva is supposed to start that breaking down process. Now, this is why it's so important to chew your food properly. So you chew your food and then it gets down into the stomach and then it gets in this acid bath and it starts to get broken down further into like a soft serve. Mm-hmm. And that soft serve goes into the small intestine where it's so molecularly teeny, 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 tiny that all of the bacteria that are in there can start to pick apart what's what. We're going to take this and we're going to take this this fat, and we're going to take this sugar, and we're going to take this mineral, and we're going to break it all up, and we're going to start to take it in the body where it needs to be taken. And then that process happens thoroughly, hopefully. And then it gets pushed down into the large intestine where most of the absorption of the water and more absorption of the nutrients happen. And that waste matter, that poo, becomes food for the bacteria that are then in your bowel. Now, we have like 3 to 5 pounds of microbes in our gut. That's like a sack of potatoes, right? And the ones in our bowel, and they all have a job. They all have a job. Like 80% are all beneficial. And then you have some like kind of neutral guys. And then you have some pathogens. Like we actually have, you know, E. coli in there. And, right. And H. pylori in the lining of our stomach, and it's supposed to be in there, and they all have a job. But then when we have gut dysbiosis, those things get out of harmony. Gut dysbiosis just means imbalance in that microbiome. And then things get out of control, and all of a sudden the H. pylori runs amok, and now you have an H. pylori infection. And then you go to the doctor, and they give you antibiotics, and they kill all the H. pylori. And you're like, oh, shit. Oh, can I cuss on the show?
Oh, yeah.
And they say,
Twitch, so it's fine.
Okay. They say, oh, poopy pants. We have, literally, all the H. pylori are dead. And now we have an overgrowth. They come back more than ever. It's killed off all the good bacteria in the stomach lining. And now the H. pylori come back like an infection. It comes back far worse. So that's, a lot of doctors, this is why my podcast is called Stuff Your Doctor Should Know.
Right. Because that was going to be my next segue.
Yeah. Because they don't, a lot of doctors just give you antibiotics and don't realize, oh my goodness, like we're going to kill off everything in the stomach and we need those H. pylori. They just need to be, you know, wrangled and in control. And so there's a way to help heal H. pylori, and it's not through antibiotics, even though you may have had some benefit with the antibiotics. But now you've got a severe imbalance in the lining of the stomach, and almost always it comes back either as H. pylori again or as another type of disturbance like an ulcer or something. So then back to the bowel and the poo and all those bacteria in there, those microbes, they're not just bacteria. There's fungus. There's, viruses that are, everything is supposed to be there, right? So we've got fungus, we've got all kinds of things, microbes in there. And there are different colonies of bacteria in the bowel that do different things. It's really important. And all, like, for example, one of the colonies is called estrobilum. And doesn't that sound like estrogen? Right. And that colony is specifically to help break down and metabolize the excess estrogen in our bodies that's causing endometriosis and breast cancer and man boobs and, you know, erectile dysfunction and prostate cancer. So if you don't have a good colony of estrobilum in your bowel, it's extinct, basically. You are recycling those estrogens. And where do they go? They go to the tissues, they go to your fat tissue, they go to your prostate, they go, et cetera, et cetera. So we have to feed all those microbes in the bowel. And what feeds those microbes? I'll let you have one guess. And let me just, it's something that 65% of Americans are deficient in.
So what feeds the microbes? This is something that you would eat?
Something that you would eat. You can also take it. It's easier than you think.
Oh, I'm sure it is. It always is. But I'll think of it at 3 o'clock in the morning.
I'll tell you. Fiber. Fiber.
Of course.
Fiber. The fiber from broccoli, the fiber from mostly vegetables is what it's called, prebiotic fiber. Not probiotic, but prebiotic. Why prebiotic? Because it's before the probiotic, before the beneficial bugs. That's what probiotics are for life. Probiotic in the gut. Are going to eat those prebiotics. It's going to feed them and make them healthy. If they've got nothing to eat, it's like bringing home a gerbil and never feeding it, right? It's just like they've got no way to live. So that whole problem, and then you have that great fiber. It's cleaning out your bowel. You have these nice poops, like 2 a day, hopefully, that aren't too stinky, that are well-formed, right? And then
you don't need poopery all day long.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's the process. Now, if that process from chewing to digestion to absorption to elimination gets sluggish or breaks down at all in any way, that's the first domino to fall in every illness. Even the way you heal from a bee sting, as opposed to the guy next to you, is determined by your gut and how you digest your food and how supported is your immune system to react to foreign invaders and a bone break and a COVID and a whatever. That all begins with those, the way your gut performs and how healthy it is.
Well, let me ask you this. Are certain people predisposed to naturally have better gut health than others? Or is this something that is strictly diet related? Is there anything genetically that, you know, might predispose somebody to not having a good gut health?
Yeah, I mean, we all have genetic predispositions for sure. And we can, it's kind of like, you know, if you're born and you're naturally gifted to play the piano, you know, you very few people are just going to, you know, be 5 years old and start playing the piano. They might be naturally gifted at it, but they've got to work on it to make it. And they might be better than me, who's not naturally gifted at all, but they're predisposed to having that gift, right? Same thing with high cholesterol. You're predisposed to having gut imbalance or high cholesterol or breast cancer, but you must trigger those predispositions. Your lifestyle is going to trigger that. So you might say, all my family has had ulcers, or all my family has had high cholesterol. The women in my mom's family have had breast cancer. And so, yeah, that is definitely a cause for you to pay more attention to helping support that those genetic mutations or those genetic SNPs, they call them, don't get flipped on, so that you have to do extra work to be able to keep that from happening. So, yes, gut imbalances, sure, you can be predisposed to it, but you can also pay closer attention and do more work on your gut to help support healthy gut health.
Healthy gut health. Say that five times fast.
I think I do.
Well, if anybody could, you could. So if, let's say somebody is struggling and they think they have some gut issues, and is there like a regimen that has to happen? Like, do you have to go through a cleanse first before you get on a healthy gut type plan or eating schedule, or can you just go right into it and just start eating gut healthy and then it'll just kind of correct itself?
I love that question. Not enough people ask this question of me. In my experience, when I first started all this work, yes, I used to think, okay, we got to get a cleanse and we got to, you know, do drastic measures. And in my many years now, I look at everything and realize that almost nobody is that person. You know, almost nobody is a, let's just climb to the top of Mount Everest right now. Like, most people fall off of their routine. Most people cannot stick to plans. And so even though when you get in that headspace, and I know that you and your wife have done this, as have we and everyone I know, which is you get motivated, especially like New Year or your birthday's coming or summer's coming, you get motivated and you're like, okay, this is it. Or your doctor gives you some not so happy news and you're like, okay, this is it. And then you get super excited and you go full tilt. And in 10 days, you're like, I can't cook another meal. Let's just go out, or it's too complicated, or it's old, I'm exhausted, whatever the reason.
Cutting up vegetables.
Yeah, exactly. And so I feel like I believe in my experience that the best place for people to start is upgrade the quality of what you're already eating. So if you're eating Jiffy peanut butter, how about buy some almond butter? How about find some raw nut butters? How about find organic nut butter? And yes, it's more expensive. And we can talk about that in another podcast if you
want. Especially almond butter.
Yeah, it is expensive. But what it does is it reduces how much you eat, hopefully, because we shouldn't be eating. Have you seen the serving size for peanut butter?
Yes.
It's like a half a teaspoon. And there's a reason for that. It's because that much oxidated fat, it oxidates. When you crush a peanut, the oil begins to oxidize. And that becomes a carcinogen. And it's not as usable to the body. Right. All fats start to get damaged when they're pressed or spun or crushed or put in the sunlight or fried. High heat damages fats. And these fats can do tax the liver. They're hard to digest. They're not great for you, basically.
And so, I know that.
Yeah. And so, you know, people say, I eat peanut butter every day. It's the healthiest thing I eat. I'm like, okay, well, I want to take that away from you. And I'll just give you the bad news first and tell you what the good news is. Buy something, maybe buy an organic peanut butter. Just try and start to upgrade what you eat. And, you know, when people say, well, it's just, your methods are expensive. And I'm like, well, so is cancer, though. So is hospital stay. So is 10 years off your life. Mm-hmm. You know, that's expensive too. Well, actually, it's cheap for your family, but no, it's expensive. You know, it's expensive to be sick. And so you have to start looking at it like medicine. That's the other thing I say. You know, look at food 80% of the time. Look at your food as nourishment and medicine. Mm-hmm. And 20% of the time, look at it as soul food, comforting. Give me that pizza. Give me that pasta. 80-20, and that's, on, you know, ironically enough, the same I mentioned before as the harmony, the balance in our microbiome is 80-20. 80% are beneficial, 20% are neutral and pathogens. They can kill you. So, right. You know, this pasta that you're going to eat in the 20%, it can kill you if you eat it every day. But how about leave it in the 20% and 80% of the time, look at that food you're making and those vegetables you're chopping and think to yourself, medicine. This is medicine.
That's a good way to think about it.
Yeah, it helps some people. I've come up with all the tricks.
Not like cough syrup medicine, just stuff that's good for your medicine. Like that'll heal you medicine.
Nourishment.
Not cover the symptoms, not cover the underlying problem.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I didn't know about the whole carcinogen thing with the crushing and the heating and that kind of stuff.
I want to, again, tell people to follow me on Instagram because I post these mini blogs there. And I just posted one about PUFAs, polyunsaturated fats. They are basically any seed oil, any nut oil, even olive oil can be bad if you overheat it. That's why the smoking temperature of fat is important. That's why, you know, cooking with like canola oil and sunflower oil and rapeseed oil, these types of oils, when they get heated, they get damaged, they get oxidized. And so that becomes toxic. And so the whole mini blog was, I was just saying that the common denominator that's pervasive amongst all diets, people that who are vegetarians their entire life still have the same rate of heart attack. This was a study done like in the 80s. Still have the same rate of heart attacks as people who are meat eaters and omnivores. Why is that? Well, they studied this as well. The pervasive thing across all those diets is what? Yeah. Oils, olive oil, cooking oil.
Yeah, I remember when that whole canola oil thing or the, you know, that all came out that it was bad for you and it was, you know, I couldn't understand what they were. It seemed like a mixed message to me. And I know a lot of people still cook with it. We don't, but I know a lot of people still do because it's inexpensive. You know, it's the cheapest oil you can buy in the grocery store. And
there's a reason it's so cheap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great if you're a desk. Not good for your liver. Yeah.
So speaking of liver, I mean, I know that obviously the liver is important, but as far as gut health go, how does good gut health and the liver kind of go hand in hand? I mean, does that make it easier for the liver to do its job kind of thing? Or is it make the liver a super liver, like a liver you're supposed to have? I mean, I hear a lot of things about liver and I don't get the correlation.
You have so many good questions. I love these questions. Okay. So the liver is a detox organ, one of your major detox organs. It's like the size of a football and it sits under your right side of your rib cage. It's massive. And hidden and nestled right behind it is your gallbladder, which is like a little water balloon. And it's like the garage to the house. It's the holding tank for the bile. That bile is what breaks down the fat you eat. But it's also, it gets very complex because the bile is also needed to help hormone production. Cholesterol is produced by the liver and the bile flow, and that also helps to produce hormones. We need healthy cholesterol levels to make hormones. High side note, cholesterol lowering drugs, right? They don't get picky with your LDL and your HDL. They just lower cholesterol production.
Right.
So if you need cholesterol to make hormones, and then we wonder at that age what's happening to our libido and what's happening to our prostate and do we have urgency to urinate and why do we have fibroids and why do we need a hysterectomy? And we think it's all just because we're getting old. And really, you know, we ended up having this bad diet. We got put on cholesterol meds. The cholesterol meds reduced our ability to make healthy hormones. And now our hormones are out of balance. All of these things, they're just dominoes, you know, in the line of dominoes. It started at your gut. I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, at your digestion. So the liver is just this massive, it has 500 functions plus.
Jeez.
Yeah, it's nuts. One of its primary ones is breaking down fat. And one of the top five is hormone conjugation, basically processing, breaking down, and getting rid of hormones. And so it's got a lot of functions. And so when we don't have a healthy diet and we have a lot of trans fats and PUFAs and bad fats and we drink and we do, so, okay, let me back up one step. The entire blood supply processes through your liver every 3 minutes.
Oh, so wow.
It gets filtered out. So think of your liver as your oil filter in your car or your air filter in your car, processing all the toxicity that you come in contact with, breathing, drinking, eating, all of it gets processed through the liver and filtered out. And so if your liver is dealing with, you know, fried food, damaged oils, pharmaceutical medications, stress even has an impact on it.
Yes.
And it starts to get burdened, you will start, the fat won't get broken down and it starts to back up into the liver, which is where people get fatty liver from. And women are very familiar with this because a lot of women, in fact, 65% more women get gallbladders removed than men.
Interesting.
And that's, I blame that on the birth control pill and I blame it on hormone, basically, you know, the estrogen problem where we have to deal with a lot more estrogen processing than men do.
Right.
And so the liver is just crucial, really important part of the whole digestive tract, part of the whole chain of command, if you will, that helps you to get rid of toxicity in the body. And it, all of that stuff, the toxins that are in the liver, they ultimately get dumped into the bowel and then you poop them out. So again, we go back to pooping and go back to how well we do that process.
So the color makes a difference too, I'm assuming.
Color of bile or poop?
Both.
Yeah. Well, bile kind of stays the same color as far as I know, which is
kinda
like
yellowish,
I call it margarita. And and poop, yeah. I mean, it depends on what you're eating. You know, I don't get too much into the color so much as the way it is, like if it's too, how often and if it's firm, like it needs to be formed. This is important. And a lot of us, as we start getting older, and now I see it in young people too, but really as we start getting older, it's like, you know, I know this is TMI, but I am healthy gut girl. So that first poop in the morning is like a blowout. It's like, you're like, wow, that was crazy. And some people need coffee to make that happen. And
yeah.
it's PC or it's loose or it's altogether diarrhea. And that is a problem. You know, this is, we got to start talking about how we can fix that. And we start with our food. We start with prebiotics. You know, digestive enzymes are really important. I think it used to be a time when we could get away with not supplementing. I think when you and I were probably much younger. And then as we started getting into our 40s, I think that's when supplementing and the food quality became so poor, where they weren't rotating crops anymore and they're putting hybridized food and genetically modified food and, of course, pesticides.
Right.
You know, glyphosate
is
so bad. And so that started to have an effect on our bodies, our, you know, the gluten. Gluten was never a demon. Gluten was, you know, God's food. Like gluten is, bread is life. It's like water. Right. But, you know, yeah, when
you're talking to the choir here.
Mm-hmm. And we still eat bread, you know, and we're careful about what we eat and when we eat it and pasta and anything that has gluten in it. But the problem is that they hybridized the gluten, not genetically modified yet, but they hybridized it to yield more. And so I had a guest that told me to also keep the stalks of the wheat shorter, because when they grow tall, they get damaged more by wind or whatever. And then that causes
a
loss of a lot of the wheat. This is a woman who grew up on a gluten farm, on a wheat farm or wheat field or whatever it's called. And so I don't know. I've heard two things about it, and they both make sense to me. To yield, ultimately, they hybridized it to yield more. But in the hybridization process, the gluten protein expanded, and this expansion of the protein made it harder for our bodies to break down. And that ultimately is what made it more difficult. And then they sprayed it with glyphosate, and that made it even more difficult to digest. That's why American wheat is harder to digest.
Well, you think about it, it's just about in everything. I mean, you can't go to a restaurant without having some kind of pasta or bread or something that has gluten in it. And it's hard to stay away from, especially if you like bread. I mean, yeah. Or good bread. And speaking of which,
it's in salad dressings, it's in cake, like everything. It's in everything.
Yeah, see, that's crazy. And like you said, gluten really wasn't a thing until recently, probably the last two decades or so, and maybe even the last 10 or 15 years.
Yeah.
Where people started paying attention to it anyway. And I just know that, well, let's go back to the gut health, the bacteria and stuff like that. Now, let's say you do have an imbalance, and is there... I know a lot of people want to go to the store and buy the probiotic gummies or go buy some kind of probiotic supplement or whatever. Do they need to do that, or can they do that with just the stuff that they eat, you know, whether it's yogurt or whatever kind of stuff?
So I have learned a tremendous amount over this last decade and more about probiotics. And unfortunately, as usual, you know, when a market gets saturated with something, anything, it degrades the quality, right? So there's a lot of probiotics out there, even high quality or high priced probiotics that actually do more harm than good. And this is why I don't know if you've heard of SIBO, but small intestinal bacterial overgrowth has become an epidemic of its own, where people are having too much, even the good kind of bacteria, growing in the wrong places, and even in the right places, just too much of it. Kind of like we were talking about again with that balance. Right. And the probiotics, because they're just effective enough to be alive, so you eat them and they are alive, and then they get just as far as maybe the small intestine, and they can't get further to do the job. They can't re-inoculate the gut, what they claim to do, or re-establish or remediate the gut bacteria. They don't have that ability because they just don't, you know. It's very difficult to get bacteria that can survive the stomach acid, let alone survive that process through all those feet of intestines. And then, so they get stuck. And they just grow there. And then it's creating this SIBO, which SIBO can be tested through a breath test. And it's basically this problem. And it causes IBS. It's incredible distress for people who have really bad SIBO. And it's hard to cure also. So a lot of my clients are SIBO patients. And so I tell people, I'd rather you take prebiotics than probiotics. There are spore-based probiotics, which are exactly what it sounds like, a spore. When you take it, it actually is such a clever little organism. It can sense when it's where it needs to be, and it can then open. And this is not, or seed itself. This is not anything strange. Like, this is how probiotics have worked from the beginning. They are spores in our soil. They're spores on, you know, like in biofilms on like a plum, how if you pick a fresh plum and it's got right. that white film on yep. it, that's a biofilm that is protecting the microbes on the fruit. And, you know, yes, it's okay to wipe it off and wash it because those microbes, you're not going to kill them. They're part of that or of that plant.
Right.
And they know when to sort of hatch in the bowel or wherever it is that they're heading.
Interesting.
And then they sense their environment and they open in there and then they start to do their work. And then they either stay there and colonize or they get pooped out and they've left a wake of healthy things that they've done, right? So spore-based probiotics, you can go to my website and my Instagram and look at my link in my bio and stuff. And I recommend these products and which ones I have tested and think are the best and the most efficacious. And so, but yeah, I would avoid like going to Trader Joe's and having, I would avoid going to Trader Joe's and having, you know, like the family or Costco and buy the family size of a probiotic or a multivitamin. Multivitamins are not exciting. They're not great. If you're having digestive upset, it's very hard to break down. First of all, you would never sit down to a meal that had all of those vitamins right. and minerals and
at one time.
You just wouldn't. And so if you're already having issues digesting things, the chances of you breaking down and utilizing that synthetic, you know, one a day or whatever it is not very good. So, you know, I would recommend getting things from your food first, for sure, mm-hmm. and breaking it down, like the digestive enzyme concept, right? You're helping to break down the food that you're eating. So if you're doing a smoothie or you're having a chicken salad or a salmon and brown rice and whatever, sweet potatoes for dinner, mm-hmm. you're breaking it down fully and using all those minerals and nutrients. So yes, food for sure. But then on top of that, a digestive enzyme, and then supplement, like I like greens powders and I like colostrums and collagen powders, but they can get quite pricey. So in my recommendations, I kind of prioritize what I think people would be ideal for people to do.
Yeah, collagen seems to be getting pushed a lot, especially in the last couple of years. I see it everywhere. And of course, everybody's got their own special la-di-da, you know, version of it. And it's, you know, since we're in this quasi-science era of humanity, you know, a lot of people have this collagen that is, you know, we'll call it based on scientific research.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I know collagen's an important thing, but I don't know that I would actually go to the store.
Is it essential?
You know, you're right. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, these are all things that we used to have. Like this collagen isn't anything new. This, like the old ways, like the Weston Price. If you don't know Weston Price, I highly recommend everybody look him up. It's a Weston Price Foundation. He's passed, but he was a dentist who became very famous for going to Africa and he was studying teeth and he was trying to figure out why these African tribes had such beautiful, perfect teeth and they didn't have toothbrushes and dental floss. Like, what the heck, you know? And basically the cliff notes of the whole book is in the whole philosophy is that returning to tradition, returning to, you know, when you eat a chicken, you would then take the bones and the carcass of that chicken, right. including the feet, and you would boil it and make a bone broth. And those chicken's feet have incredible amount of collagen in them. There's this floppy little squeezy feet that that's the collagen. Yep. And that's also what keeps our face nice and soft and squeezy. And, you know, it's the same thing. And then, you know, you boil those and then there's all this collagen in the bone broth. And then you cook rice with the bone broth and you drink the bone broth and you make other food with the bone broth. You eat the whole chicken. Maybe not the beak, but maybe. And then
yeah, it depends on what tribe, I guess.
I guess, right? And yeah, and that's the concept behind the collagen. They're just taking these things that we used to have in traditional diets. Mm-hmm. Every culture had them. Every culture, even the American culture back in the day. You know, there was a time when you could go to any store and buy a jar of pig's feet, and now you can't hardly.
It was in our family, believe me. When I grew up in a Southern family, and I was the first one kind of born outside of the South. I was born in Cleveland, Ohio. But I can remember growing up, there was always a jar of pickled pig's feet in the refrigerator.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. And every culture had a fermented food. You know, you have like sauerkraut and you have pickles. And I mean, there's a difference between vinegar pickles, like that have sugar and things, but then there's fermented foods that are fermented naturally. And kimchi and, you know, every culture has a fermented food. And cured foods, cured meats, and they all have probiotic content. They all have beneficial bacteria. And we've moved away from all that. So now instead of doing it ourselves, they're bottling it and saying, hey, try this collagen, try this bone broth. It's a good concept because we all need those things, but we can also learn to make them ourselves again, you know?
It's touching on something that you said earlier. Even as a kid, say growing up, I can remember how much different I felt playing in the, just had my hands in the dirt, you know, running outside barefoot, that kind of thing. And then the older I got and the more that I paid attention to it, you know, like when I hit my 40s, I started reading about it. People would still, like it was a thing to go barefoot, stand outside with your feet in the dirt and look at the sun, sun gazing or whatever they called it.
Mm-hmm.
And picking your own fruit, picking your own vegetables. And as long as they don't have pesticides on them, it was always better to eat them. My dad always taught me we would always had a garden. We would literally go out in the garden and we would pick stuff right off the stalk and eat it right there. There's no washing, no rubbing it on anything, just straight up, just pick it off and eat it, you know, throw it on a sandwich, do whatever.
Nice.
I think a lot of people have never got to experience that.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of what's missing in even just being happy, you know, like the whole, when was the last time somebody went outside barefoot, just to walk around in the grass, you know, just listening to the breeze, listening to the leaves move, that kind of thing. And people are so focused on, well, I can take care of it with a bottle of something. You know, I can just go to the store and buy a bottle of something and that'll fix it. You know, I'll read
go to the doctor and get a bottle of something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was going to be my next statement. When I was younger, it seemed like, and I don't know if it's me, it seemed like doctors really did care more about preventative health when I was younger and not so much trying to fix it after it's already happened kind of thing. And now it seems like whenever I go to the doctor, it's just like, it's almost like they have a checklist, and then when you're done with the checklist, you know, here's your new prescription, and no conversation about what are you eating, you know, are you stressed out, are you, you know, what are you worried about, or you know, how's your job going, or you know, nothing like that. And that's what it really bugs me, because there seems to be an extreme between that and the holistic type, natural type doctors. Like there's no common ground, like there's no in between. It seems like there's just a, I wish it would evolve a little bit more towards your direction and be a little more available.
You know?
It's a lot of people that claim to do it and that claim that they're, you know, and I don't know what to think about them, you know, because, and it's, I know it's a hang up that everybody probably has because they're just not used to the whole idea of it. And I think the mainstream has a lot to do with that because Big Pharma owns pretty much all the media outlets. So they don't want you to know about people like you, you know, and it's kind of sad because they're always thinking of ways, and I hate to say it this way, but they're always thinking of ways to, well, if we let this naturally happen this way, the population will drop because people are always getting sick and they're dying. We don't want to make them healthy and live long lives because we don't want an overcrowded world, or, you know, we don't want to try and figure it out on the other end of it. We would just rather see them die off, you know, and make money off of them in the meantime.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's
kind of morbid.
It is, but it's starting to seem like that's exactly what's going on. You know, it's starting to look like a farm. I used to think it was just the nature of the model, right? It's the medical model, and it's the nature of the way that works. And nothing ever stays the same. It just keeps going in the direction of the momentum, which is the money making. Mm-hmm. And so there was a time when doctors, like you said, had an older medical model. They were the family doctor. And right. then insurance, you know, got involved in a very nefarious way and started to alter how medical doctors practice. And so, like, for example, my husband is a chiropractor. You know, if he takes insurance, if he were to begin to take insurance, it would completely alter how he practices, because right. now you are in a model that requires you to take this many patients a day in order to make money. Because yep. you've got to pay the insurance companies, right? They've got to pay that whole process has to happen. And so it changes how much time he can spend per patient. And so he just does cash only practice. And now he can spend 20, 30 minutes with somebody and get a lot more accomplished and really, really help them. Well, right. if you go to medical school and you've got a $250,000 student loan you've got to pay off, you know, now you've got a family and you've got a big house and a boat, maybe two houses. And now, and only because you wanted to live the American dream. And now it's like, if I start giving those people the time they need, I'm going to lose out. I'm going to, first of all, be in debt. I can't pay off my student loan, da, da, da. And so they fall into that medical model of, you know, 5 minutes per client and the nurse does most of the work. And, and then they start pimping out drugs. And then they become a victim to the pharmaceutical rep that comes in and says, hey, have you heard about the new drug? And that pharmaceutical rep has no medical background, most right. of them. And they're pimping these technologies, and they don't know, you know, and they're just like, listen, this new drug makes Prozac look like nothing. Like, this is great. Everybody's doing it. And if you sell this many this month, it's going to pay for this and it's going to do that. And by the way, here's two tickets to the next Suns game or whatever. And then all of a sudden they get wrapped up in that. And I don't think that they started out that way. I think they just got caught up in that, whatever, yes. you know, that process. But now I do feel like they're, you know, when we go back and look at when pharmacology came into play in the healthcare system of America and how it was a nefarious beginning and how they did blackball and turn mm-hmm. chiropractors and homeopaths into snake oil salesmen.
Right.
Chiropractors have been fighting this fight. They're kind of laughing right now. They're laughing at everybody who's really trying to help people, because they're like, we've been fighting this fight forever. Yep. And, you know, and it's changing now, you know, the family, you know, the nuclear, I can never say this right. The nuclear family is the enemy. You know, the old right. values, the old system, the old way of doing things. I mean, I can't even say the word enema without people freaking out, let alone coffee enema, let alone, right. you know, any kind of herbal remedy that I promote. Like, people just go, what? And, you know, that's the way it used to be. And now they're pushing us away from that. In fact, my last book has a chapter in it. I think it's the last book, called Dirty Lifestyle. And it's about, you know, how our microbiomes are so diverse. The whole planet thrives on diversity, mm-hmm. right? The more you reduce diversity, the more you use antibiotics and use antibacterial hand soaps and use antifungals, and you know, the more you reduce your exposure to more microbes out in the open, the right. less you touch people, the less you hug people. You don't have a pet. You don't go barefoot. You isolate in place. You shelter in place. The less diverse your microbiome becomes. And the less diverse your microbiome becomes, the weaker your immune system becomes. This is not a conspiracy. This is science that people know already. This is, you can look this yep. up. I think it still exists, unless it's starting to get scrubbed.
And like then add fear on top of that.
Yes. And people don't know this. So they think, you know, like my mom, she's like, don't let your dog lick you. And I didn't like it. I didn't like my dog to lick me. But now I'm like, lick it up, kid. Like, go ahead. Like, I let her lick my face, not my mouth. But, you know, like, they have done studies on people who live on farms, people who are exposed to livestock, people who garden, that they have less allergies. They have less seasonal allergies, less sensitivities to foods. They have a stronger immune system. And so now what have they done to us? You know, they're making us shelter in place and isolate and stand 6 feet apart. I just start to think that there's a total nefarious plan behind this.
There is. Yeah. I mean, if people can't see that, that's not on us kind of thing. And I'm to the point now where there's too many obvious things happening that if you can't see at least one of them and at least question it, I figure there's about 10% of the population that's probably just, I hate to use this phrase, but going to get left behind, sort of.
You think 10%? I think more than that.
I think there's a lot of people that don't say anything that are kind of on the fence that kind of think that something's not right, but are afraid to say something about it, yeah, or afraid to, you know, voice acknowledge their opinion it, because they see what's happening on Facebook, you know, the people arguing with, I mean, it's like a knockdown, drag out battle sometimes when you see some of these Facebook posts. Well, yeah. I should qualify that. I haven't been on Facebook in a while because I keep getting kicked off of platforms, but
no.
So I leave it because, you know, my wife and I are real estate agents. So we have a, you know, business page, and I don't want that affecting our business. So I purposely left, for the most part, Facebook because I'm tired of arguing with people that don't want to, backing up, real science can be questioned. Real science is meant to be questioned. Real science has a process, you know, to go through before it's accepted. We're in this quasi pseudoscience era where you can put the word or the phrase experts in front of anything that you say. If you say experts say, or, you know, studies show or whatever, you don't have to back it up with anything. You can just put that in front of it. And now it's science because you said that, because you said an expert said it, mm-hmm. Whether they said it or not, or somebody said it, is irrelevant. It's the fact that you used the word expert or study or whatever it is. And people just believe it. Uh-huh. You know, they just believe it without questioning it. And I think the big red pill for a lot of people that were on that boat is, well, if we get the vaccine, we can go back to normal and our lives can get back to normal. Then when they found out, no, still need to wear a mask, still need, you know, this to fly in an airplane. You still need in most countries, like Australia right now is a total, nice. I feel so bad for Australians because uh-huh. That is just such a tyrannical country right now. And yeah. I mean, they're shooting people in the streets now for their health.
Amazing.
But it's interesting that people, when they took the vaccine thinking, well, if everybody does it, we can all get back to normal and we can forget this whole nasty mess.
Yeah.
Not realizing that's just the tip of the iceberg. And so now everything that we conspiracy theorists say becomes truth in about 6 months. So You have people that, okay, now you need a second shot. Okay, now you need boosters. Well, no, there's another variant. So now you're going to need another booster for that. So it's going to be a perpetual train wreck of booster shots. And these people are like, oh my God, I don't want to be wrong. I don't want to admit I was wrong that I got on this train. I have to kind of ride that train now because I kind of made my bed in it, so to speak. So
yeah.
So now you guys are going to ruin our lives because you're not vaccinated, and you're the ones holding us up. You're the ones that are, you know, keeping us from getting back to normal. And it's just an insane clown world that we live in right now where science doesn't matter and only whatever athletes or politicians or whoever, whatever they say is gospel truth.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly they're health experts now. And
yeah,
you know, up until 2 years ago, nobody wore a mask we had a tuberculosis outbreak here not too long ago. Nobody gave a shit about that.
Mm-hmm.
They just, yeah, okay. You know, just stay away from that place for a few days or whatever. And
yeah,
go around wearing masks and trying to pump people full of chemicals and that kind of stuff. And you go to work. I can't tell you the last time. Let's see, I retired about 2 years ago to help my wife with her real estate business. But I can't tell you the last time I was actually sick and I had to call in and call off of work. There's been other reasons I've called off for, you know, just because I didn't feel like going in, but I was never sick. But I'm not the kind of person that overwashes my hands or, you know, whatever. I'm not constantly, I drank out of the hose when I was a kid. You know, I was playing in the dirt. I would eat apples off the tree, plums off the tree, corn off the stalk. And my dad, my parents always told me, it's like, you know, if you think you should wash your hands, wash your hands. Like if you touch something that you think was, you know, a little questionable or whatever, you know, wash your hands before dinner, you know.
Yeah.
You don't have to wash them all day long kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think the whole nefarious part of what you were saying, or not what you were saying, but you were referring to the whole nefarious agenda has been around for a while. And I think they just see the opportunity right now that, okay, look how easy we were able to get them to do this. Let's keep pushing. Let's keep going with this. Let's see how far we can go, you know. And it's become obvious in other countries where they want to go with it because they're ahead of the curve. We were lucky because we're still one of the only countries that are still armed. The citizens are still armed. You know, Australians, they gave up their weapons not too long ago. And in other countries, you know, there's no way to defend themselves against a police state, basically. And so we could do a whole show about that. I do want to say something
about that, though. I looked up this thing when you were saying when you had a tuberculosis outbreak, and I was going to say, you know, where were the masks in 2013 when 3,400,000 people died? Is that right?
A lot of people still die. A lot of people still die of tuberculosis.
Of the flu. That was of the
and
flu.
And the flu. That was 34 million. There's 34 million cases or something like that. And there's the 1,800 cases of the flu last year. It went from like 34 million cases to
1,800. I literally had to recheck that because I'm like, was it 34 million?
Yes.
Think about that. And what? How many people died of the flu in 2020, between 2020 and 2021? 1,800 or something. It's such a funny thing because I just ask people to look up if you can anymore. You couldn't before. I mean, you could before, and now I don't think you can. Is to look up the total death tally
from all causes
from the last 5 years to now. You can't find it anymore unless you have a link for it. I certainly don't, but it's negligible. Last year it was negligible. It was
I save stuff like that. And if I know it's going to disappear, I'll snip an image of it, a copy of it, and I'll put it in a folder. So I've got folders upon folders on my computer that I keep backing up of stuff that I know is going to disappear.
Nice. And I do a similar thing like I did with that one meme. And then I'm looking at it now and I'm like, wait, 34. I can't even say the number because it doesn't sound real. But where the hell were our masks then? What about grandma then?
There's been a number of videos over the last year. And the gaslighting has been unbelievable. I've never seen as much gaslighting as I've seen in the last year. A reporter had asked somebody at a press conference, where have all the flu cases gone? You know, it basically has gone from 34 million cases to 1,800 cases of the flu. And this woman had the balls on national television to say, well, the flu has went away because everybody's doing a great job wearing masks.
But COVID's getting worse.
but COVID's getting worse. So yeah, wearing masks. But so that you just told the public that the masks work for the flu, but not for COVID. But in a way you're saying, well, the masks don't work. And what the story you're trying to sell is, well, it's incredible that, and then people buy it. I heard somebody right after that, I was talking to, I can't remember who I was talking to, but I was laughing so hard. I said, what do you think about the flu disappearing. You know, and this is one of my friends that's, I'm not going to say no longer my friend, but he, I just don't talk to him anymore because we can't talk. Mm-hmm. So I said, what do you think about, you know, all the flu cases essentially disappearing, you know, and what do you think about this video? He goes, well, I think it's great. He goes, that shows that masks work. I'm like, what about COVID though? They're making it sound like it's the Black Plague. I mean,
pandemic.
And look, I mean, look at the people that are doing well with COVID. They don't have TVs. The Amish, homeless people, you know, immigrants apparently don't need to be vaccinated or masked or anything like that. Because it's, I guess it's not an issue with them. And if with the whole kids in school being masked and stuff, can't we at least give them restaurant tables to put in the school so they can take their masks off? Because it seems like that whole thing with it's okay until you get to your table, you know?
Right. Or can we give them whatever exemptions and things they did for those people at the Emmys? Can we do that for the kids? Yeah. You know, they said we did special precautions, and okay, can we have those for the nation's children, please?
Right. Just it's the whole rules for thee, not for me kind of thing. Is hopefully this is just a big wake up call for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I do want to touch on something that we'd kind of been communicating about, and I was kind of excited about, was the fact that you were going to volunteer for the election in California.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened with that? I know you were excited to go volunteer. And
yeah. Well, I did the training, and that was, I feel like, probably the reason. I'm always looking like, what was the reason that this happened? Why would I have gone through all this and ended up not being able to do it? And I think the reason that I gained from it was just that, you know, I learned such a tremendous amount about voting, about the voting process, about voter fraud, about the percentage of voter fraud, you know, increases and human error increases like by 75% with mail-in ballots, and, you know, all the different ways that things can go wrong and why it's a nonpartisan issue and that everybody should care about this, because it may not be your candidate this election, but it will be your candidate at some point. And it will be your, you know, your proposition that you're voting against and whatever. Mm-hmm. It will be you if this continues to happen. So, I got in touch with, or Project Veritas got in touch with me, and they liked what I was going to be doing because it wasn't just ballot observation. I mean, it wasn't poll observation. It was ballot observation. I was going to watch either, you know, signature matching, adjudication, tabulation, whatever. I was going to be watching one of those things. And, you know, I'm sure it was nobody's fault except for that the equipment arrived on election day for the gubernatorial recall in California. And I was like, that's fine. I had a hotel reserved in Pomona. I was going out for 3 days and I was just going to be there and have my spy cams on. And I was going to do, I was so ready, you know, and I opened the boxes and they were, all of the items they sent me needed to be charged. And so, you know, they were, you know, like little DVRs that had huge battery packs on them and no less than 3 hours to charge them. And then I needed to teach myself how to use these things. Like they were little buttons and they were all these spy cam things, really cool, like James Bond style stuff. And I was very excited about all of it. And I had a smartphone that was not really a smartphone. And so I needed to teach myself how to use this stuff. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to go tomorrow. I know it's after the election, but that's going to be when they're really going to need us, you know, because they're going to, it's going to be a neck and I know it's going to be neck and neck. I was sure it was going to be neck and neck race, that they were going to win. I knew they'd win. The governor would, I knew the recall would fail. But I thought for sure it would be, you know, like neck and neck.
Right.
Especially because of how many people signed the recall to get on the recall. there was millions. And then on top of that, there's, I mean, if you've ever been to California and you've never driven outside of Los Angeles and San Francisco, most of the state is red. Most of it is blue collar. Yeah. Most of it is farmers. Most of it is blue collar workers, immigrant, legal immigrants who are working in this country legally or have, you know, visas to be working here. A lot of, I mean, everybody here, a large part of the people who live in California are hardworking blue collar people who are actually middle class families who are conservative. They may not be Trumpers, but they're conservative. Right. And so I was sure it was going to be a landslide. So I'm sitting here, I learned everything. I was ready to go first thing in the morning. And then it was just a total, they had no shame. They even let the reddest county in California, one of the reddest counties, Orange County, they even said it was like 67% for against the recall, which is a joke. That is a joke. Like, you cannot drive around Orange County and not realize that that is a conservative county. So my bubble was burst, and I didn't want to go out to Pomona. It's 2 hours away. I didn't want to pay for the hotel. And I was like, for what? For what? Nobody's even talking about Dominion. They're talking about the ballot harvesting and all this stuff. Nobody's talking about the real elephant in the room, which is Dominion. You know why? Because people are being sued. Even Steve Bannon on the War Room the other day, someone brought up Dominion and he said, oh, I don't, let's not talk about that. I was like, wow, nobody wants to be sued by them. You know, everyone's being sued by them. So I'm like, we're never going to address this elephant in the room. And we're never going to win another election until this elephant in the room gets addressed. So I decided that I want to move to a red state and I want to keep it red. And I want to take my knowledge from this training and I want to join. I don't want to be a ballot observer. I want to be like a signature matcher. I want to be somebody who's literally there in charge of maybe, you know, managing that, because I think a lot of people are volunteers, but there are also subcontracted people that come in to do stuff like signature matching. Mm-hmm. And those are the people I don't trust. Though I think it's at grassroots level. It's at the smallest, lowest level of political action is where this country is crumbling. It's where they came in. They saw the holes in the system. They saw where people were not paying attention, where, you know, they could come in and steal an election for someone like Mike Useless Bonin in my county, in my city here in Venice. And they could get in there and they could push their little agenda 2030 and their little green agendas. And they could get in and crumble this country from the inside like this. And I feel like that's where the change has to happen. I don't think we're going to do it at the top down. Nope. It's got to be from the bottom up. So
it has to start from the bottom, because a lot of those people in the past think that these small things don't matter or they don't care about them. And it's like, nope, you know, this isn't going to matter in the large scale kind of
thing. I'm guilty of that
kind of mentality. Well, I think everybody is.
Yeah.
I mean, because before this last election, a lot of people just assumed that anything that they did wouldn't matter because it was on too small of a scale. Like, unless they could affect something on a national level, there was no way they could affect any kind of change. And which is the exact opposite of what needs to happen, because it's that one person that might overlook something because it's their buddy or it's part of their good old boys club. And they've never been challenged on it in the past. Like, and these people think they can keep getting away with it at the local level. Like, even at city councils and, you know, school boards, I'm not going to say nobody, cause I don't go to every school board meeting or city council meeting, but I would hazard a guess that a lot of these people run roughshod over the weaker, kind of more meek people that are probably more qualified to do the job. And there's no resistance. So we can keep getting away with this, you know. So when my term's done, I'm going to have my buddy or somebody that I know, I'm going to support him. And we're going to run roughshod over those other people. And we're just going to keep doing it. It's like Boss Hogg from the Dukes of Hazzard, him and his little cronies, you know. It's just like, a system that needs to be, once it starts getting challenged on a regular basis at the local level, they're going to see, well, we can't just run roughshod over people anymore. We actually have to have a platform to stand on. We actually have to have something that the people want to stand behind. And we can't change a few votes here and a few votes there. We can't make sure this machine's, you know, accessible to the internet or, you know, whatever the case is, because people are watching now. People are starting to pay attention. And I believe in that so much so that on my Telegram channel and some of the other Telegram channels that I follow, we've had a few voice chats in the last week or so about what does this look like? What does this movement look like at the grassroots in different areas? I know there's a lot of people that want to be involved, and there's a lot of people that don't know how to be involved or don't know, or they're afraid that their family's going to say something. They're afraid their neighbors are going to say something. They're afraid of, you know, being ostracized in some way, so they don't take that first step. And so one of the things that we talked about was, well, let's take city councils, for example. How would somebody get involved that wants to get involved but is afraid to get up and talk? What would they do? So, and one of those suggestions that came out of that, and it was brilliant, was just start going to the meetings. You don't have to say anything. Just start observing. Just start listening to what people are saying. You know, who's saying what, who supports what. And, you know, after a certain amount of time, you're going to start getting comfortable with who those people are, and they're going to get comfortable with seeing you there, that now you can start baby stepping into your participation into those city council meetings. And, you know, it doesn't have to be all at once. It you know, and what is it? So long story short, one of the women in the group is working on, for lack of a better word, a manual that has really good suggestions and really good roadmaps to different areas locally that, because everybody has different talents, everybody has different things that they support, that they feel strongly about, and they may not care about the city council, but they care about their election board, or they care about the school board, or they care about the local farmers union, or whatever the case is. So a way to look at something and say, okay, this makes sense, this is a good way to participate. And now I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid that my neighbor is going to say something. I'm not afraid my family member is going to say something. I'm just going to start participating.
Yeah.
So one of the things that came out of that, I want to have one of my shows, because I usually do about three shows a week. I want to take one of those shows and give anybody that wants to participate. Right now we have about six people in this group that are willing to get on a show and talk about it and hash things out every week. You know, like a round table. I call it a community action round table. That's what the segment title is called. So I want to give people a public forum that's out there in the internet. So people that are sitting on the fence, they can see, okay, well, these people are actually on this show talking about this. They're not doing it behind the scenes kind of thing. So how can I participate? You know, kind of thing. So, and that ties in with my next question to you, because we had talked about this a little bit through email, was what that looks like at the grassroots level. Like, I know what your story is, but I know you feel strongly that people should participate at the grassroots level, at the local level. So what are your thoughts on that as far as, people maybe thinking about taking action or getting involved, but are still sitting on the fence?
I think, well, for me, it was this move to, you know, to go to the EIPCA, which is the Election Integrity Project of California. Mm-hmm. And a friend had sent it to me, and I just opened it, and I was like, oh, this sounds like something I want to check out. So I don't know. I mean, I'm in the same place. I'm like, okay, you know, we might be moving to Florida. And, you know, I thought, well, what the first thing I want to do is I want to find out, you know, first of all, understand the geography, and am I in a separate county or am I city? laws, like what exactly, where am I? And then look into the city council of the area, look into, you know, all these meetings, these town hall meetings and things, and just find out if there's an election integrity project in this area of Florida. And, you know, since I already have started off in that direction, like find out, like, can I volunteer? And not just volunteer to ballot observe, you know, but I mean, to poll observe, but, you know, inquire, like, how can I really get what, you know, what that guy, whatever that guy's doing, I want that job. How do I get that job? Like, start asking questions. And I think that's the scary part about all of this is, like, first of all, going to a city council meeting, right? That in itself is like, we all have to get over that, I think. And, you know, realizing that we have, we are impactful. That's something I think that I'm grateful for from my father, and my, just my personality type is my father always instilled in us, like, you're the one that's going to do something about it. You know, if you see somebody, my father was a police officer as well as a drill sergeant. And he would say, you know, if you ever run, if you ever come upon an accident, if you ever find somebody in distress, if you ever see someone being abducted or something like that, or if you're being abducted, you know, you point to somebody passing by and you say, you help me. You help me with this person. Help you get help. Never just scream help, because people always think someone else is going to do it. They don't think that they're impactful as one person for whatever reason. Maybe they don't have enough. They have a bad relationship with their dad. Maybe they didn't have a mom, daddy issues, mommy issues. Whatever, maybe they were bullied in school and they just don't feel effective, right?
Right.
And one of, and that's valid, but one of the ways that you, I think we need to get around it all is like, you know, imagine if you were telling your little kid, imagine the little kid in you, and you're telling that little kid, you can make a difference. You know, you can be one of many who can make a difference. And you don't have to be great. You can be a cog in a wheel. You can go ahead and show up and ballot observe. You can volunteer for something. Right. I always think about these poor people who stand at malls and stuff with these clipboards and say, hi, you want to sign for proposition? Hi, do you want to get rid of da-da-da? And I'm just like, you know, and it's like, how about you just say, I'm not going to sign it now because I don't know what it is, but could you tell me what it is? Oh, it's Proposition 248, Bill 7765. Here, let me write that down or take a picture of it. I'm going to go home and look at what that is before I sign this. Okay, well, I'll tell you. No, really. I'm going to study this and go home and look at it and look at it and see if it's something you want to sign. See, like, how often do we not know what the hell the prop is? We're like, oh, we go to vote and we vote for the candidate that we went to vote for. And then we skip the judge and we skip the sheriff and we skip the, you know, council member, and we skip Prop 78 because we have no idea what it is. Or we say, oh, I remember I should vote yes on that. Like, that should be our homework. Like, we can be effective by becoming effective voters, no matter who you're voting for. Like, make yourself, educate yourself about what it is and who it is you're voting for. That won't take that much time. So I just ironed that out as we talked about it, because I was thinking, how can we do that? We can do it in that way, by a voter becoming, what's the word, becoming effective and educated voters.
That's a very important, that's very important what you just touched on, because I would hazard a guess that most people, I've been guilty of this in the past, have gone and just voted for a couple people.
Yeah, not, I've done it. Yeah.
You know, not any of the issues or any of the other people on the ballot. You know, I think, especially with what's happening now, I think people really need to take that extra step and become educated about all the issues that are in their area and all the people that are running in their area. And I think it wouldn't have necessarily an immediate effect, but it would have a long-term effect. It would have a more permanent effect. Like, it would have a more, especially if you taught that to your kids, because I know I was never taught how to vote.
No way. Yeah.
Other than just showing up, you know, when I turned 18 or whatever, saying, hey, you're old enough to vote now. You know, it was like balancing a checkbook when you're in high school or whatever. It's like,
yeah.
Some schools taught it, some didn't. Fortunately, our school did. But just even basic life stuff, why you should care about certain things, you know, why you should care about your election, why you should care about your city council people, why you should care about the school board, even if you don't have kids on the, in the school system, why you should still care about it. And it's that whole hands off, somebody else is going to do it mentality. I don't, you know, my vote doesn't matter or doesn't, you know, I think that's a big thing too with younger people. It's like, man, my vote really doesn't matter. I know when I was young, I thought that quite a bit, especially when it came to, you know, presidential elections and that kind of stuff. I really thought, well, my one vote is not going to make a difference.
Well, now it really doesn't matter.
when you have some algorithms that could, you know, do the work for you, you really, you know, people have to wake up, and it's to the point where if you look at Australia, that's the future. Like if people really want to know what's going to happen, if this were allowed to continue to play out, look at Australia, because that's exactly what would happen here if this were to continue to play out. I personally don't think it will get to that point, but there's a lot of people that don't care. Like they just want to get on with their lives. And I keep hearing that getting back to normal. And if it really rubs me the wrong way, because people think that what they had before was normal. That's kind of scary, because, you know, going to school, thinking you have to get married, have kids, go to college, get a job, you know, work 8 to 10, 12 hours a day, you know, rinse, repeat, watch TV, rinse, repeat, watch TV, you know, whatever. I mean, that's not a life to me. You know, that's not a, but we're taught that that's, you should be so busy trying to keep a roof over your head, keep food on the table, that you're not paying attention to the stuff that's going on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
That you're purposely kept busy, because people that are kept busy and unaware can't challenge what's really going on.
Yeah. And,
right now, I think we're seeing people challenging what's going on because they honestly didn't know that was going on. And again, to their credit, I mean, I know there's a lot of good people in bad situations or bad positions. And I think that they're starting to see that, you know, maybe I shouldn't take everything at face value. Maybe I should question news reports, or I should question. I mean, I think we're both old enough to know that we grew up in a country where you could have friends that had completely different opinions than you, and you were still friends.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't hate each other. You didn't yell at each other. You just agreed to disagree.
Yeah. And
that was that.
I mean, I think it was all part of the plan, and it's, you know, just this incredible, it's this old school art of war, divide and conquer, you know. America was, you know, guilty of many bad things and made a lot of enemies and a lot of allies, but those enemies never forget. And they found our weak spots. And this is nothing short of a takeover, as far as I'm concerned. I think it's just everything that's happening, it's just getting brushed under the rug, or like every day, right? Something insane will happen that would in any other decade or in any other year would be show-stopping historical event. You know, just the Southern invasion right now, just show-stopping historical event that any other president would be swinging from a rope by now. And it's not, it's like, it goes to Afghanistan. It's gone. You know, I think it just, this like, today the Congress requires the banks to turn over account info to the IRS. Nah, it's gone. What? Yeah. I'm sorry. What? Like all these things are mind-boggling events and they're happening. We're being bulldozed and people better wake up, because there is no normal anymore. The republic that you knew is totally crumbling. Like now we just need to rebuild. And this is how we're rebuilding, is these grassroots level. And, you know, I don't just have faith in all the patriots that are armed. I have faith in, there's all these constitutional lawyers and these medical doctors and these scientists like Dr. Malone and these people who are, you know, they're not just going to rush onto YouTube and be like, this is wrong. They're filing lawsuits. They're taking these people to task. And let me tell you, those compromised judges and compromised people, their days are numbered, because I really think it's not going to take a populace. It's like, it's kind of like the 80-20 concept. It's like, you know, that 20% there can be a tipping point, and that 20% of truthers, patriots, people who are honest, God-fearing, loving, you don't have to be God-fearing, okay? Leave that out. I know there are people out there like, you know, Sam Harris and people who are atheists, mm-hmm. who are still truth seekers, who are still people who will fight for this republic. And there's a lot of them out there. And I think that those are the people who are going to start to, maybe we'll see Friday, you know, going to start to chip away at the judicial system that's been compromised, and chip away at these politicians who are compromised, and start to get them out. And you see it, you see little bits everywhere. And that's what I really, you know, besides God, that's what I really have faith in. But for people who want things to go back to normal, if they haven't figured out by this year that normal is gone, that mm-hmm. that life is never coming back ever, 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 that it's, you know, you need to, like, it's time to start to think about what the new republic's going to look like, what the new America is going to look like, and what side have you chosen? You know, what side did you pick?
It comes down to, if you want the change, you have to try to affect the change yourself, because you can't have the mentality that somebody else is going to do it anymore, because that's what got us in this spot to begin with. Yeah. And constitutional lawyers, I hope more of them come forward, or people that can contribute come forward. From what I see, I don't see a lot of them, but
really,
at least, again, from the stuff that I pay attention to, I don't see a lot of, I see a lot of doctors and a lot of nurses and a lot of, you know, health practitioners coming forward and doing something about it. But I just made a list of, had a link to a list of lawyers and doctors and things like that in each state that are kind of on board with flipping.
Yeah.
But it's going to take people to take action. It's going to take people getting pushed to the point of, because everybody has a different tolerance level as far as, well, I'm going to take this to this certain point and then I'm going to do something about it. Mm-hmm. And it seems like we're getting to that point now where there's more people than not that are at that tipping point, that are at that precipice, or that, you know, whatever you want to call it, that they're thinking about taking some kind of action, or they're so mad that they want to try and figure out how to do something. And my wife's a good example of it. I mean, at the beginning of this, I don't think that she was fully on board with some of the stuff that I was talking about and what I was being a part of. And now, I'm not going to say she's totally 100% on board with everything, but she's to the point where she wants to do something. Like, now she's pissed. Now she sees that a lot of the things I've been talking about and other people have been talking about, yeah, they're not going away. You know, you're not a conspiracy theorist anymore. You know, this is a real thing. Like, she made the comment, you know, we have enough money. We can go live a couple of years, like somewhere in Wyoming or whatever, you know, go live off the grid somewhere, you know?
Yeah.
And one of the things that kind of has been kind of pushing her to that edge is seeing all these people turn on each other, like on Facebook, because she's a real big Facebook, you know, she's been on there for a long time and she has a lot of friends, and like, I can't remember how many friends she has, but she's got a ton. Mm-hmm. But it's personally affecting her now, like, because she sees her friends turning on each other, and she sees the possibility that the IRS is going to be digging in everybody's account that has more than $600 in it. And, you know, that you're not going to have a way to say, you know, to keep your money safe anymore, kind of thing. And so there's a lot of things that, and the whole hearing stories from her friends about the vaccine and that whole thing, it's just, So it's nice that I have somebody that, whether she believes what I was saying or not, supported me in the beginning, but is now kind of a little more, okay, now I want to help. I want to take action too. I want to figure something out. I want to, like, she wants to start her own show, you know, she wants to do her own podcast, and she's nice. Not so much about this kind of stuff, but more, I think, so she has a way to, give people some hope, you know, like these are things that you can, whether it's involving real estate or whatever, you know, whether it's involving health or, you know, that kind of thing. And so I guess if I had to say something to people that would be watching this eventually, little things make a big impact. Don't swing for the fences first, because like Kitty said, you can be that cog in the wheel. You can be that nuisance at the city council meeting or that nuisance at the school board meeting, just enough so people know that they just can't get away with it anymore. There's people there questioning what they're doing. And so they have to pay attention to what they're doing a little closer. And in some cases, these people never get voted in to begin with, you know, because you've done your education as a voter and you're voting in the people that you think will do the right job or the correct job or do the right thing, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. I mean, look at how many people, I can't remember. There was a list not too long ago that was sent out that showed with names the amount of Chinese Communist Party operatives in school systems and around in local governments and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It was a huge number. I mean, it was like over 200,000. And that's at the local school board level, at, you know, city councils, that kind of stuff. And these people are in some way, shape, or form influenced by the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah.
And so if they've done that much work to get to this point where they have that many people working with them, it's an uphill battle, but it's a battle that can be won.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like being, now that our attention is on it, is even that is helpful. You know, people like to say, you know, I hear it all the time. I just hate politics. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to turn the TV on. Or they say, you know, I can't do anything about it. So I don't want to hear it. It upsets me. And it's like, I say, well, you can, like with sex trafficking, you know, I always say, like, my mom's like, I don't want to know. And I said, well, I think that we owe it to these people who are suffering to know. And I think that there is something you can do. You can pray, you know, you can pray for them. And you can also call your attention to it. And that, it's like just shedding light on it. It's kind of like, you know, in quantum physics, you know, how, you know, just like the particle observation theory, where you just look at the particle and it changes. Like you just use the fact that you're aware, just the fact that we're all saying, what's up with those Dominion machines? Just that energy, that frequency is making a difference. And praying about it, I think all those things make a difference. And so, yeah, it's like small things can have a big impact, like a mosquito in a room, right? In the middle of the night. It's like a tiny little thing and it just destroys your whole night. It's like we can be that mosquito and take back this country. Yeah, there's no other way to say it.
Well, so let me ask you this then. Tell us a little bit about your podcasts. I know, how long have you been doing those?
Almost 6 years, or maybe a little over 6 years. And it was just my very good friend, Mark, who is a tech guy, you know, he's a camera guy, tech guy, everything tech. He was like, these podcast things are taking off. I'm like, no, I don't want to. He would do all my filming for all my videos for Donna Gates and my chef stuff and everything. Mm-hmm. And he was my camera guy, my director, and he was my everything. And then he's like, we should do this podcast. You have so much stuff to share. And so I was like, all right. So he convinced me and we started off, and it was pretty cheesy beginning, but still really good info. And I'm telling you, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe the response, because I have a Facebook group called the Estrogen Dominance Support Group, which might be where I know your wife from, maybe. And that has 16,500 members or more. I'm not sure. Oh, and, wow. And it's where I get most of my engagement. So the concept was just, you know, all the ways that I became healthy and became balanced. And by the way, every time we talk about diet and stuff like that, people think I'm just like this guru of health or whatever. And I'm not. Like, I am, my favorite food is pizza. I love me some drinks. Like, I am in the same boat y'all are. I have really good genetics, and that is great too. But I have, you know, I have to really be careful because I am just a person, and I, you know, definitely falter all the time with my diet, and I get eczema sometimes, and I don't have the perfect poops. So I, just so you know, like, it's a job, you know, it's a commitment and a job. So the podcast concept was just like, what are all the things that helped me get well and bring balance to my life and made me thrive? And they're all things that doctors don't know about. And so these are stuff your doctor should know. Like, does your doctor know that you shouldn't be on a PPI ongoing? Like, you shouldn't be on, you know, protein pump inhibitors for 6 years. You shouldn't be on Wellbutrin for a lifetime drug. Like, does your doctor know these things? And does your doctor know how an enema works and how good it is for you in these cases? And does your doctor know how to bring down your cholesterol naturally? Does your doctor know what Ayurvedic is? Does your doctor know what acupuncture is? So that's how it started.
No, it was wonderful having you. I appreciate you coming on. I know we kind of went all over the board today, but this was kind of a free-for-all. It wasn't
it was good fun. It was really good.
Thank you for listening to the Over the Target podcast with Johnny Patriot. Until next time, remember, nothing can stop what's coming. Where we go one, we go all. We go all.
Oh, wasn't that fun? We had to cut it short because, boy, honestly, you could go on his show and just talk for 5 hours because it's just fun. It's just a good time. And make sure you follow him on his podcast, Over the Target. And and you'll learn a lot. He's doing amazing things with the community. He started this roundtable meeting that we've been having about how to get involved locally in your political sphere in your community and how you can have an impact on decisions being made from the smallest levels to the most important levels. And so I think everybody should really, really keep an eye on that kind of stuff. It's just as important as gut health, being involved in your community, unless you want to get bulldozed by crazy decisions and all wild, tyrannical things happening. No, thank you. It's time for us to get involved, friends. And it's time for you to pay more attention to your poor gut. So go on to healthygutgirl.com, click on the shop page, and you can find all you need to know about me and your gut. That's why he